Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the analyst at the Cricket World Cup. Simon, I've got something to tell you actually. I've seen two games of cricket in South London in the last 2 hours. First, obviously, India against Australia at the Kennington Oval. But as I was driving to your house, I also saw a second game going on Clapham Common, and it was Last Man Stands.
Oh, right.
You know all about Last Man Stands?
I do.
The 8-a-side game where the last man can bat on his own. It's a 16-over a-side game, so it's all over in 2 hours. It's kind of almost like the concept of the 100. And why I just mentioned it is because, actually, Clapham Common is one of the cradles of the game. The London team first played at the Clapham Common, on the Clapham Common, in about 1703 or something. Even before the MCC were born, there was cricket on Clapham Common. So it's quite nice to see that, actually. Slightly different sort of game from India v Australia at the Kennington Oval, but cricket nonetheless.
When you were driving past, did you see a wicket fall?
I saw four byes, actually. Right, I saw a big wipe across the line, and the balls went straight through the keeper's legs, straight to the boundary. It's one of those kind of sports where you probably do need a backstop.
Right, OK. You know what it's like, though, when you're driving past, or you go past on a train or whatever, you know, whatever mode of transport you're on, you're always looking, is there going to be a wicket? Is something going to happen in the game? I just wondered anyway.
Well, actually, quite often you sit there hoping for something to happen at all. I mean, even a ball to be bowled, because there's some pointless bit of waving of the field, or somebody who's not in the right position, or somebody not watching, or the umpire's not ready, or the batsman's not ready, or whatever. So, actually, I did see a couple of balls, and not very high standard of cricket. I won't name the teams involved. But we did see a high standard of cricket at Kennington Oval. And we're going to look back at the tournament and also hear shortly as well from the great Indian captain, Sourav Ganguly, who's had some success of his own in the World Cup. And he's going to talk about his thoughts on the tournament so far. But meantime, what did you think of today?
India winning all day from the moment the coin came down and India won the toss. I mean, OK, you've got to go out and play well after you've won the toss. But right from the start, I thought India controlled the match and they looked inevitable winners from, even well inside their own innings. They looked like they were going to get a massive score. They did. And then that score was just too many for Australia. I thought it slightly reminded me, I mean, you have to use your imagination a little bit here, slightly reminded me of the 1979 World Cup final, West Indies against England, where West Indies got a big score and England were just too slow at the start. So David Warner today reminded me of Geoffrey Boycott.
Well, I'm not sure if he'll see that as a compliment or not. Perhaps he won't. Yeah, Warner was a strange innings, actually. He just got stuck, didn't he? He just didn't ever get the momentum he wanted. But I suppose that is also removing the fact that, or ignoring the fact that, the Indian bowling was excellent today. And I think the Australian bowling, meanwhile, was poor, actually. Apart from Pat Cummins, who bowled superbly, didn't think Mitchell Starc was quite on it. I thought the second line of attack, Nathan Coulter-Nile, pretty ordinary. Glenn Maxwell, OK. Adam Zampa started with an absolutely abysmal pie down the leg side to Rohit Sharma and never really recovered. And Marcus Stoinis has had a pretty horrible match as well. 2 for 62 from 7 overs and out second ball. So the Australian sort of backup players, spinners and medium pacers, medium bowlers, didn't look adequate to me, and I think that's a big problem for Australia.
Yeah, I've never been particularly convinced by Stoinis' bowling. He gets it right every now and again, but contrast that with India's backup bowling, when you've got two wrist spinners, okay, you look at their figures. Yadav, 9 overs for 55. Chahal, 10 overs, 2 for 62. They're not massively impressive, but actually what they did was they built pressure on Australia, and then later on, say Kumar came back and was able to profit from that in a way, not quite in the same way. I'm driving the analogy quite a long distance actually, but in the way that Joel Garner was able to benefit in the 1979 World Cup final. England had to play all those shots and he got all those wickets.
Yeah. After a night on the rum, apparently, as well. He didn't even go to bed.
What, Bhubaneswar Kumar?
Well, no. maybe he should try that too. But Joel Garner claims in that 1979 final that the years before when he played big tournaments, big finals, he couldn't sleep and he was restless at night. So he decided before the World Cup final of 79 to go out drinking and bowl brilliantly. Yeah. And I mean, Garfield Sobers actually used to apply that sort of rationale to his cricket as well.
And so, I think one or two others in the history of the game as well. But it's a bit
Jeff Boycott.
No, it's a bit different now. But India winning all day, I think the toss was quite important.
Yeah, very much so.
Is this becoming, or will it become even more so, a bat-first World Cup? I thought, you know, yesterday, Bangladesh putting England into bat. No. Go out there, try to get a decent score on the board and try to build some pressure.
Yeah.
If you let England, if you let India get going, I mean, the other point as well is, you know, if you don't get the openers out, you might as well give up. I mean, you've got to get early wickets, haven't you? You've got to nip out Rohit or Dhawan. You've got to nip out Roy or Bairstow.
Yeah.
You really have.
Mm.
And also, you know, Finch and Warner as well. Finch, of course, was run out by Warner today, which did not please him.
Mm.
They seem to have made up by the end of the match, but you know it's like in a dressing room when someone runs someone out.
Yes, I think there was a bit of damage in the dressing room today. It wasn't done by Warner for a change, or you know, some kind of one or two seat slats might have got broken or something, I should think, because Finch did look pretty furious. I spoke to the Surrey groundsman, the Oval groundsman, actually before play, and I've been on this sort of philosophy all along about batting first, and 10:30 starts in the morning in England are not what they were 20 years ago when there wasn't juice in the pitch and greenness and so on. Now these pitches are bone dry. And I spoke to Lee at the Oval today, the groundsman, said, you know, what time are you here this morning? He said sort of 6:30, 7, the covers are off by 7:15, 7:30, you know, out to the open to the elements for 3 hours, yeah. Bone dry.
We get light about quarter to five.
Yeah, I know. And you know, the drainage on the grounds, he said, actually, because it's been a dampish week, they've had covers on the square, and that, of course, keeps the square very dry.
Yeah.
There's no such business as sort of pitches sweating under covers anymore. So that pitch was bone dry at the start. It was the right thing to bat first. And I just think, generally, that the Australians, they didn't really apply themselves that well. It wasn't a particularly accurate or typically sort of miserly kind of Australian approach. And interestingly, when I talked to Sourav Ganguly after the game, he agreed with me that there's a bit of concern about the lack of potency of the Australian attack.
You know, I've said at the start of the competition, teams which have good spinners will be in good position in the tournament, and the middle overs are very, very crucial. And Australia didn't have for a long, long time, I'm seeing an Australian bowling attack not being able to pick wickets in the middle. Yes, it was a good pitch, a flat pitch. And when you play on these sort of pitches, you know they're going to get 300. But it's how much after 300? 315, 320, 325. If Australia would have restricted them to 325, 330, this was a game to win. But just that 20 runs. So it's about being on your toes when you're playing on flat wickets, because we've played a lot on flat pitches and we're used to bowlers being hit all around the park. So they just lost a bit in the middle, but it's still early days, I think.
Yeah, it's early days, but two of the three things impressed me about India. One was the way Shikhar Dhawan adapted his game when he wasn't timing the ball to start with. Two was the impact of Hardik Pandya. And three was the control of the spinners.
Yeah, that's always going to be the difference, isn't it? Adam Zampa needed to do a lot better than he did. Australia going it with one spinner, Maxwell obviously a part-timer, and India's strength has been spin. But Australia did play the spinners as well. It's not that they played poorly, but just 358 was too much. I think that's where they lost the game. They allowed India 30 runs more.
Mm. And the people who made those runs, well, Pandya was one. Kohli played a well-controlled innings. They just feel... It feels like Pandya, to me, that number six, number seven sort of spot. In fact, he was promoted today, wasn't he? But that number six, seven spot where you've got an impact player who can get 50 off 20 balls could well be India's best chance of beating England. I mean, England have that strength in the middle order as well.
England's bowling is better, I think. England are a good side. They've got good spin in the middle. Rashid and Moeen Ali will be good in these conditions. But, you know, it's the top order of India, which is its strength. Look at the number of hundreds they have got. You know, 42 for Kohli, 23 for Rohit Sharma, Shekhar Dhawan, 17 in just 130 games. So that's a lot of numbers up there. And they set the platform up. You know, teams which have to beat India will have to hurt them up front, like Pakistan did the Champions Trophy 2 years ago. If you let these boys get off to a good start, they'll beat many teams in the world.
So what do you need to win the World Cup now? As a team, not necessarily as an Indian team, but as a team, what can you see being the things, the assets that you need in this tournament?
Well, it's difficult, you know. It's too early to say, you know, situations change every day. Australia batted first, got 340. It would have been tough for India as well. Like it happened in the Champions Trophy 2 years ago, India were dominating the competition. Pakistan were put to bat in the final, 350, 340, game was over. So it'll keep changing because the difference between the sides, especially England, Australia, India, maybe New Zealand, Pakistan, not great. Pakistan, you know, got hammered by England in the four games when they were here, and then came the big game in Nottingham, and they went past England. So it's a situation I don't think you can predict that far. India have played well today. You know, it could be different when they get in the play in the semi-finals or finals again.
Are you excited by it?
Oh, I love it. I love this format. You know, good games. As I went through the commentary, there were rosters given of games for the week. Every game will be a cracker of a game, and this is the best format, and it should be continued.
So which is your next one?
I go to Bristol, where Sri Lanka play Bangladesh, and then I go to Nottingham on 13, where India play New Zealand, and then the big game, India-Pakistan.
India-Pakistan, I can't wait for that. Next Sunday, yeah. That's going to be amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, they're a dangerous side. They're a dangerous side. They stunned India in the finals a couple of years ago. It'll be packed, I can say that.
Be noisy.
Noisy and packed, yes. And the broadcasters will go berserk.
And how many selfies will you have to be involved in? About 200?
That's why I make sure I come early. I was here at 8:25 this morning to get away from the crowd, get into the zone and be at peace.
I remember commentating with you in Nagpur, India-South Africa World Cup 2011, and you came in to the commentary box and we couldn't see out of the commentary box because everybody was looking in at you. But you're used to that now, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I'm used to that, and I treat that as an honour and a respect. Just deal with it, just lead my life, you know, that's how it's been.
Well, that was Sourav Ganguly. I was at that game in Nagpur. I think the television commentary boxes were on the far side from the radio boxes, and he actually got a car around from the outside of the ground to do his radio spells because, you know, he'd just been mobbed if he was inside the ground making his way around. But it was remarkable just watching so many people watch him commentate rather than actually watch the game that was going on out in front of them.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I first met Sourav on an England A tour in 1995, playing for India A at the time. And I saw him bat number six for India A in a couple of test matches, sort of A test matches. And I thought, he can't play. I think he's just a slogger. He's a left-handed slogger. He's not going to get any runs. He's not going to get international cricket. 25,000 international runs later, I have to eat my bit of humble pie. But I think he's right about the Australians. I think he's, you know, he's got some points about India as well. Their fielding was very good. Chahal and Kuldeep Yadav, very effective spin combination, especially when backing up a big score like that, 352.
That's the
little
point,
bit of dryness in the pitch.
When you've got those runs yeah. behind
and you. Even Steve Smith, who played well, couldn't get on top of them. Warner couldn't get on top of them. And they just left too much to do. And it was it was a very good foundation created by Rohit Sharma and Shikhar Dhawan. I like the way that Dhawan actually adapted his game. He sort of tried to play some big shots early on and couldn't quite get it together. So he actually started playing later. And his bruised thumb, which he had a bit of treatment for, seemed to sort of help him because he didn't try and force it anymore. He almost played a bit later and used the pace of the ball. And the Australians just had no way of getting them out and stemming the flow. And then they had the big impact. And I think this is where India are going to be tough to beat. Hardik Pandya, who just stood right back on his stumps, almost like a baseballer with bat aloft, right in front of the stumps, inside the crease, and just smacked a rapid, well, we're looking at the scorecard, he smacked 48 and 27 balls.
Yeah.
And that really was probably the difference in the end.
Yeah, if it's his day, I mean, he's a very dangerous player, isn't he? He can score extremely quickly and in unorthodox fashion as well. He's got that helicopter stroke as well. India, well, I backed them at the start of the tournament. I thought they were the team to beat, you know, especially in English conditions. You think, well, that, you know, that's no, English conditions are sort of green and seeming. No, not really. They are, they're quite dry, quite good pitches, dry, and, you know, a few used pitches as well. And they've got good enough batsmen to get big scores, and they've got the canny bowlers at the start, and they've got the spinners to come in and bowl as well. So they, you know, they've got a lot of bases covered. Of course, like any team, like England in 2017, like India in 2017 as well, you can have a bad day. They lost to Pakistan in the final, but you know, well, good start from them. They've won efficiently two matches now, beaten South Africa and they've beaten Australia. That's a good start for India.
It is, and not much of a contribution from MS Dhoni. In fact, 27, which I mean is okay, from 14 balls, just added a little bit of injury to the misery that Australia already suffering. I'm going to name drop here. I actually was at a dinner on Friday night with MS Dhoni. Well, he was attending anyway.
No, he was at dinner with you.
Yes, of course he was. And of course he was. People clustering round him, wanting endless selfies. But I did get 20 minutes chatting with him, and I one of the things I asked him was, you know, he's got this incredible cold-blooded ruthlessness, and he always looks incredibly cool in any rather nerve-wracking situation when a lot of others of us would look tense or nervous in some way, and he just looks incredibly like. He looks so certain about the outcome and very just very composed in any situation. And I said, you know, where do you get that from? Because it's been equated with some of his traits with the mentality of a psychopath, you know, just this sort of cold-blooded ruthlessness in a way. I said, are you really like that? And he said, no. He said, I'm not, actually. He said, I'm human, like anyone else. I feel the tension, I feel the excitement, I feel the nerves, I feel the pressure, but I don't show it. I've learnt, basically, to have a poker face or a calm face and not give away what I'm feeling inside.
Breaking news on this podcast, MS Dhoni is not a psychopath. Right, OK. You get all the big stories, Jos.
Well.
But no, it's interesting, though, isn't it? Because he does give that very calm, cool exterior. And
it's going to hold India in huge stead, obviously, in the remainder of the tournament. They are up there, obviously, in the top four with England and with New Zealand at the moment. Are you impressed by New Zealand? They beat Afghanistan. You were at that game yesterday.
I wasn't impressed with their batting. I was quite impressed with their bowling. But, I mean, Afghanistan are poor. They're not a good side. They've really struggled so far in this World Cup. I mean, if they were a sort of reasonable side, I think they would have beaten Sri Lanka the other day in Cardiff. I wasn't really impressed with them. They put on 66 the first wicket and then New Zealand took over. I was impressed with New Zealand's, you know, bowling. They've got some pace. Lockie Ferguson, Jimmy Neesham had a day out. I was really unimpressed with New Zealand's approach, actually. It took, 32 overs to knock off 170. That may come to hurt them later in the tournament if net run rate does come in to play. I mean, I can understand, you know, get it done, win the game, don't take any chances. You know, it was a game they had to win. But they didn't look like potential World Cup winners to me yesterday. Not with the bat. I thought a team that was confident, that believed in itself, that was here, you know, meaning business, would have just gone out there and bang, 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 knocked those runs off and won the game. I mean, you know, they could have actually risked a bit more to win quicker. I mean, you know, if they'd won by 4 wickets in 22 overs, that's much better than winning by 7 wickets as they did in 32 overs. I suppose you could say it was useful for someone like Kane Williamson to get runs, because he has actually got a very good World Cup record. He's really thin on World Cup runs overall. So a score for him, which is always important if your skipper's getting runs. Anyway, that was just my observation. New Zealand might just been a bit of an off day. There was a bit in the pitch for the bowlers at Taunton. So, you know, you had to work reasonably hard, but not that impressed with New Zealand. Not as impressed as I think I expected to be with them. And they've got some bigger tests coming up, their next match is India.
Yeah, and that's going to be tough. And so our sort of selection for the top four is becoming more and more blurred, really. But there's no doubt that the two outstanding teams for me are India and England. I mean, England, the way they blitzed Bangladesh on Saturday, you know, putting up that excellent first wicket stand and playing very sensibly, Roy and Bairstow, confronted by Shakib Al Hasan's spin, and then just surging ahead once they had built that foundation, the others coming in and adding, you know, lots of emphasis and power to that last sort of 10, 15 overs. So they piled up that 380 score. They were never going to lose that. And actually, it's good also to see Jofra Archer just producing an absolute peach to get an early wicket as well. So England having probably, you know, been a bit disappointed by their performance against Pakistan, potential banana skin of Bangladesh was well and truly squashed.
Yeah, I thought it was unthinkable that England could lose on Saturday. What I mean is it wasn't impossible, but it was unthinkable. It was a game they had to win. Paul Farbrace was with us on commentary on Friday and said, you know, I asked him what sort of percentage chance he gave Bangladesh, and he said, I give them no percent chance. England will thrash them tomorrow. And, you know, he was roughly right. 100-run victory in a one-day game is a big defeat, isn't it? And get to score 380-odd. Shakib, excellent, of course, for Bangladesh, who, I mean, just looking at the tournament, it's sort of, we're about nearly a third of the way through. It's beginning to take shape a little bit. I mean, I think we're down to six teams now, really, who can, it's become a six-team World Cup. I'm discounting Afghanistan, obviously, South Africa, and Bangladesh, I'm discounting them as well, because they've lost two big games now. They're a tidy side and they're sort of dangerous, but they're just not quite good enough. And I'm discounting Sri Lanka, who I think are a bit of a rabble, really. Mm.
So it's sort of, you know, one of... You feel India and England are going to get to the semi-finals and presumably Australia. Mm. So it's then going to be one of New Zealand, Pakistan, West Indies.
Yeah. I wouldn't be categorical about those three teams that you mentioned definitely getting through the semi-finals. I think India will. Well, that's fair. Yeah, I mean they probably will, and that was my tip at the start of the tournament. Are those three plus one other? But there's still a chance.
Much to play for.
Well, there is, and there's chances for slip ups. England playing West Indies in Southampton, and that is going to be a really fascinating game on Friday in Southampton. Yeah. To see how England cope with the power of the West Indies, both in their bowling and particularly in their batting. Remember, West Indies took England down twice in the Caribbean in that four match series. So if England's only two from four on Friday evening, then they've still got some work to do.
Well, that's food for thought for you, and that's going to be our next podcast, I think, probably after the West Indies v England game on Friday, and then of course we've got the big one on Sunday, India against Pakistan at Old Trafford. That's going to be an absolute belter. I'm looking forward to that even now. So I think we'll leave you with those thoughts, because anyway, I need to go back and join that last man stands match and show them how to bowl leg spin. You going to come with me?
No.
Why not?
Because
I'm retired.
Should I tell you why? Because I've been on Planet World Cup 24/7, it feels like.
You need a break.
For the last 10 days, and I actually need to cook my kids some tea.
Very good. OK, well, I'll let you go and do that. So we've had a great week or two, and we'll be back with you later in the week. And just a reminder that this week's podcast is brought to you in association with Cricket 19, the official video game of the Ashes. For more information on this fabulous game, in which actually you can pretend you're Jasprit Bumrah, amongst others, and to purchase it, please visit amazon.co.uk. Thanks for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.